The Spice World, Between Two Dunes, an inebriated exploration of Willis E. McNally's Dune Encyclopedia. My name is Derek.
And my name is Megan. Each month we will let you, our faithful Spice Worlders, vote on a topic from the Dune Encyclopedia.
Oh, and what did they choose this month, Megan?
The Ventport Sevna story.
That they did. And this is going to touch on some cool subjects we've touched on before. Are you in with the Society of Mystical Mariners? You got to say no. Don't shake your head.
No.
No, that's fine. We're going to also touch on a little bit of the Ampaliros. And Megan, your favorite thing you've been looking for is a rogue Bene Gesserit, if I recall.
That's exciting.
It's pretty exciting.
Derek.
No.
What's going on here?
Oh, Megan, you got to go.
Oh, okay. Goodbye.
Derek.
Oh, what's up?
I'm taking Giovanni out for a little walk. Just, you know, having a good day.
You guys are pretty close, aren't you?
Yeah.
Oh, is that what's going on?
Is that what this is? I think, if I'm being totally honest, a little bit. If we're going to broach this now, you and I are still in the holiday season. It's going to pass.
Okay. Well, all right. You know what? That's fine. Quid pro quo. We're good. We're good.
Okay. I get Giovanni back.
Yeah.
I won't use Megan as host. I won't. Perfect. No, I won't do the.
You get to keep the hot seat.
Yeah. I won't do the show on the side. Awesome. Okay.
I noticed you went away with a glass of her wine, though.
Common misconception, Mike. No wine today.
It is a wine.
Okay. It's a wine with a different name, though.
It's a wine with a twist.
Yeah. It's mead.
Yeah. You've never had mead before.
No, this is the first glass of mead I've ever had. We've broken a lot of new grounds for me, alcohol-wise. May or may not be a good thing. I don't know. As I said it, do I celebrate this?
I'm a great influence.
You are. What is it? You've had this before.
Yeah. So mead, first of all, is a honey wine. Mm-hmm. It's very sweet. It's, depending on what you get, it can be really mellow, but it tends to be pretty high in the alcohol content, just like a normal glass of wine would be.
Okay.
This one is another local one. Actually, it's on the East End, the city.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah,
when things open up again, we can go to a tasting.
We're going to have to go to Cellador and the Honey Bank.
Cellador closed down.
Well, the one tasting.
Well, the tasting room.
Yeah, we still get these people.
That's true. So this is called Honeymaker. Maine-based company, and it is delicious. This is the semi-sweet mead, and I don't think I have any tasting notes on here.
Oh, man. But I got you back there. Like I said, first one ever. So me trying it. It's got a strong bite in the front, but man, it dissolves away into just pure honey flavor on your tongue. And it tastes like I just swallowed a spoonful of honey.
And what I like about this is like a no gimmicks kind of mead. This is just like the sweet honey taste.
Mm-hmm.
And I really appreciate it. We did get a second bottle. We've been having a couple 2-bottle things. I don't know how I feel about them, Derek.
Yeah. You tried to pressure me not to, but you caved. You caved very easily. And we have another, it's a cranberry mead. So that's
true. Same company, mm-hmm. Honeymaker. Bless the Honeymaker and his water.
Cheers. Classic puns.
Classic puns. I've never tried the cranberry, though, so that'll be a fun little thing for us to do.
Okay, yeah, we'll get to that. We'll stop a little ways in the episode, and we'll take a good sample of that. I think we got some good stopping points as we go along in this journey.
So we're doing the Norma Senva? Sevna? What is it?
It is Sevna. I think she's very Russian.
I think I've been teasing it as the Senva story.
So, I mean, I think I've called it Serva and a few things over. I've thrown an
R. The Servo story.
I threw an R in the middle. Well, I think I've taken from Norma, and I was putting that R in her last name.
Mm-hmm.
But Brian Herbert changes her name. So that also throws in the confusion.
Wait, what's he change it to?
Senva. So what you thought. And then it should be Sevna. So the V and the N are getting switched
around. He just switched two consonants?
I believe so.
Why?
Because he's a madman. Why did he change Holtzman?
He's
T.O. Holtzman.
I was about to say he's a mad Holtzman, but I forgot that he did that to Holtzman.
He threw that out too. Yeah. I don't know why. It's tragic. And his you realize his Holtzman story would not end with Holtzman being shot down by the jihad either.
Wait, how does his Holtzman story end?
I don't know.
Might have to do a alternate reality Holtzman kind of thing.
Yeah, that was the one. I didn't do that. I guess I didn't realize he changed Holtzman so much.
Yeah.
Okay. Or else I would have pulled out the Brian Herbert thing when we did the Holtzman background.
Right.
Yeah, that might be an addendum. Maybe we'll throw that into this last book in Dune
before
we close it out.
Just a nice little extra thing.
That's great that you touched on. But yeah, this is going to be the combined articles of Aurelius Venport and Norma Sevna. And
do you say Aurelius?
Yeah.
I think it's Aurelius.
You're right.
I'm pretty sure that's a Roman name.
That is the other word that I make up all the time. Aurelius.
Unless Brian changed that one too. I don't know.
Nope, that's a Derek original right there. Hey, we all get to do a little fanfic, Mike.
We all get one Brian.
You know, I think it's the Herbert laws. We all get one name. You can do whatever you want to one name in the series. And I put my stake here. But this story, I couldn't separate these two articles. They had to go together, so I knew it would be a great Between Two Dunes option.
Awesome.
Because, Mike, it's going to touch on some cool, cool stuff. Remember the Society of Mystical Mariners?
Oh, yeah. We had an episode where we talked about the foundation of... It was the smuggler episode, right?
Yep. It was in Chapter 28, so Episode 29 of Spice World Pod.
It was like the foundation of the guild, and it was the Mystic Mariners first. That's where you had the Rastafarian kind of
Yeah, accent. Well, so, like, we alluded to the Mystic Mariners, and we established, like, straight guild. And then, yeah, we met Freeman Mason and Jasta Mason.
Jasta Mason.
Jasta Mason, yeah, gotcha. He's the one who did it. They weren't Jamaican until him. He threw the whole family out. So we're going to go and actually talk about the Mariners. We're also, Mike, we're going to touch on Ampeliros. I got another candidate.
Really?
Yep, we got throw another one in the mix.
Oh, yeah.
And on top of that, it just gets better and better every time we pull these stories up, Mike. How about another rogue Bene Gesserit?
Oh, Derek.
Why not, right? Let's see what happens.
Let's shoot for the moon, baby.
Stir this pot. And let's see what we get when we pour it out. Do you have any preconceived notions before we go in? I mean, I kind of have given you the teaser of, like, what happens before, obviously, with the we did pre-guild travel.
Uh-huh.
And then the Masons are, like, where they're going to go. So it's just this small 100-year window you're kind of missing of the guild. I wonder if you have any shots in the dark where we're going to go, what we're going to do.
I mean, I don't know. I'm not sure where their stake is in things.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe Norma... And Aurelius are, like, married or something? Maybe they have a house or... Oh, no, you wouldn't have houses then, would you? No, you do have houses then.
In, like, Dune in general?
Well, no, like, the Atreides house and, like, the Harkonnen
house. Oh, okay. I thought you meant literally, like, no. A home. I was like, yeah.
No, like, they live on the proverbial space street.
You know what I'm saying? No. So they aren't, like, a great house. Yeah, yeah. Or, like, a big family.
Yeah.
No, they're just scientists, down and outs.
Okay.
And we're actually
down and outs.
Well, we're on the outskirts of the kind of Frau Ferluchis here. Like, why don't we dive right in? That's a great little bit you're pulling from. But I'll give you, we're going to start in the year 140 before Guild. All right. That's going to be when Aurelius Venport is born.
Okay.
And he is a man, a scientist, and an explorer called the Foster Father of the Spacing Guild.
That's a great name.
That's okay, yeah. And Norma Sevna, she is an Ixian shipwright and navigator, foster mother of the Spacing Guild.
Okay.
Send these little parents up. She was born in 148 before Guild.
Okay.
So she's actually 8 years older than Aurelius.
Gotcha.
Aurelius. Oh, I'm going to mix this up a few times.
It's Aurelius.
Yeah, it is. It very much is, because we're going to get to the Latin meaning of that word. It's important for everything else.
All right, so this, like, foster mother. What?
Yeah,
I think they say foster mother and foster father.
I thought, dude, that's why I really wanted to get that right in the beginning. I'm like, yeah, they give them foster, which I thought was a little weird.
So did they, like, in a way, did they adopt, like, something that was already...
Well, I think it's more because they are responsible for the Society of Mystical Mariners. They actually aren't there for the transition to the guild. That happens post.
Because that's 100 years later.
Mm-hmm. And they there's sort of a sudden end to each of them.
That gotcha. Would be the but they would stuff. Have they would have access to spice
mm-hmm.
as, like, a resource.
Cannot in the same manner.
Well, they're not, like, using it as, like, for its medicinal purposes or anything correct. Like that. But they have it. They have access to it. Or maybe, like, it's around them. Maybe it does have some sort of effect on them that gives them a little longer lifespans. I don't know, man. It could happen.
Don't worry about their lifespans. That's not going to come into effect. Events are going to dictate the end of their lives.
Oh, God.
Things are going to happen in this story.
We're talking, like, next decade.
No. Like, we get, like I said, they live for about 100 years. Like, we get a good life out of it. Okay. Not 100.
Wait.
But they get a good life, nonetheless. Oopsie-daisy. They just get, like, a good 60 years. We're going to end at about 79 before Guild.
Okay.
So that leaves, like, an 80-year period before the Guild is established. That's all. So I think that distinction is what makes them foster parents. But still, it was weird. Yeah. Yeah. Why not just call it father of, and like, who else is taking this title? Maybe Josta?
Maybe Josta.
But why don't we, let's go back to the beginning, Mike. And do you recall how the Butlerian Jihad, when it kicked off, the Comans left, right?
Right.
And they went over to Rachis. Mm-hmm. Which was the planet subjugating them.
Right.
They threw over their masters. Revolution was had.
Was it Rachis that became Ix, or was it... No, Comos became Ix.
Comos becomes Ix.
Yeah.
Because, well, Comos is empty, because everyone gets on the boats, and we all fly over together, because we stole the ships coming down for the collection, the great tax.
Right. Oh, quick thing, too. I think order of operations, as far as this episode's being released, mm-hmm. I think... we're releasing our Butlerian Jihad B2D in like to the public right after right before the book 3.
Yep. Okay. I see what you're saying.
Yeah. Sorry. Yeah.
No. The calendar math is going to work out a little bit against me right now.
So, there's going to be some things that we may sort of like relate to or bring up here and there, not to try and make you guys that confused. We just happened to record this one after the fact, so that one's coming. There's going to be plenty of goodies in that one.
But. Yeah. So consider this a loose primer on it.
Yeah.
And hopefully that'll illustrate a little more thoroughly for you guys. So I will be as brief as I can with any of these touchbacks, too. Mm-hmm. But this is setting up this group of people for us, because it's important that we know that. So the Comans went there. The people from Rachis are then sent to Comos, and they live there now.
Okay, they just switch it up.
Yeah, we just swap planets, and then Comos eventually becomes Ix. But it's important to know, like, that is what seeded that. We took this technology-rich population, and we just moved them over to Ix. They don't stop producing technology. They just wait for the Jihad to leave and are like, okay, now? And they do a little bit of tinkering in this. Okay. They keep it low-key. Right. We're not crazy, Mike. Jihad was brutal. We don't want these people to come back. But numbers of the scientist refugees from Rachis were resettled on the abandoned planet Comos at the outset of the Butlerian Jihad, and among their offspring, the most energetic and intelligent was Aurelius Venport. So he's going to be like first generation, it sounds like, on that planet.
Damn.
And then of them that grow up, like, he is just a young whippersnapper who just has a heart for the stars, and he wants to get out there. So as a young man, he gained notoriety for advocating an overt maintenance of technology and for his astonishing progress in the field of interstellar craft. So from a young age, he is just already promoting, like, don't let our technology revert back anymore. Like, we do have to take care of what's here, because most of the industrial infrastructure is left by the Jihad. They don't wipe that out.
They went backwards a lot when that happened.
Well, it's that they oppress the people. They don't, like, level all the factories necessarily. Especially once Jean Butler is out of the picture, all they care about is making sure you don't have your cell phone. Like, and that's it. They leave, like, the factory standing, and then the people are so traumatized, they're just like, they don't touch it. Like, the factories just go decrepit, they're never run, and they kind of collapse.
The cell phone's there, but you don't fucking pick them up.
Exactly. So, like, Venport sees this, and he's like, no, like, there should be a maintenance of all this technology around us. This is important to some extent. Like, and he's very out front with it and open, more so than I think other people were comfortable enough.
Right. He took a stand.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it's just like curiosity can't be boxed in. His views were shared by Norma Sevna, with whom he also shared a liaison that lasted until his disappearance. Sevna shared his desire, but differed with him on method. Throughout their union, she provided a diplomatic break on his enthusiasm. So she's pumping the brakes while he's getting crazy. Like,
like, he gets too excited. I appreciate what you're doing, but, like, pull back, buddy.
But, honey, that's ridiculous. Sit down.
So, liaison?
I don't know why they're being coy. They're just a couple. I mean, maybe they never got married, but, like, there's no one else that they care about. They make for a pretty good team.
That was just a weird word to use, I guess. I don't think I would ever use that word.
Yeah. Yeah. It was, like, again, a weird choice. And that was the same author that chose the foster parents, too. So
yeah.
Maybe just a weird person. not my cup of tea.
Do you think they have a new word of the day calendar, like, by their bed? Just like, oh, this is going to be a good one.
That's a weird Foster. I don't know. All right, but I'll use it. Got to do what the calendar says. So now Norma Sevna, she was the most original and brilliant of the Ixian refugees who left the planet in search of a world on which to solve the problem paramount in their minds, the reunion of mankind by developing a computerless interstellar navigation system. Because as we're going to get to, we're actually going to be leaving Ix here in a little bit. So Sevna's common sense and intelligence complemented the ferocious energy of her lover, Aurelius, and the two of them made possible the later organization of the Spacing Guild, with all the effect on mankind which that implies. This is just hitting home how important their union is going to be, and the effect, like, this is groundbreaking, more almost as groundbreaking as every revelation that Holtzman brought back,
right,
where it's going to change the entire course and capability of, like, the Imperium.
Well, I mean, in a way, I mean, you're going into a new age,
mm-hmm,
and you're at the forefront of it.
It's like an epoch-marking event. Now, I told you kind of in the beginning there just that it refers to Norma as, like, the Ixian refugees. Because okay. I told you, they were already refugees to Comos, which became Ix. Now Ix is sort of just like, hey, guys, why don't you head out? Because by 110 before Guild, so Venport is, like, what, 30 now?
Okay.
And Norma Sevna is 38. Venport's research had taken him beyond the capabilities of Ix's fledgling technology. The Ixians, therefore, encouraged Venport to build 3 ships, take his people, and leave the planet.
Okay, it's very Mayflower-ish.
Well, yeah, but he's getting too close to the edge of the Jihad. Like, that he's making the Ixians uncomfortable. They're like, why don't you leave before this, like, gets out of hand?
We fund it for you.
Yeah, and they're
just get off the planet, please.
Use whatever resources you need, build your fucking ships, and go. So these people leave, and they become the Aurelian Exiles.
Oh, my God.
So they get a cool name. Yeah, and we take to the stars.
Wait, do you know the names of these ships?
Oh, I don't. They don't give me...
They don't give you names?
Nope. You got that, you taking this one?
Yeah, I can find the names real quick.
Of course there are no names, Mike. This is a Dune series. So, and I think you got to follow the structure of the Columbus ships then. We need 2 that are 1, and the last one needs to be a double worder. Or at least add Santa to it. Make it a saint. That's what it is.
Oh, yeah. So for our space boats, we're gonna have the Katsis.
The Katsis, so that's, okay, we need a Pinta.
The Zambo.
Zambo, and then I need a Santa something.
The Santa Armenta.
The Santa Armenta. So we take off from Ix on our 3 beautiful vessels. I guess I'm going to get on the Santa Armenta, personally. Oh,
yeah, it does sound good.
It sounds like a classy
Although liner. I feel like they've got some classy drinks on the Katsis, so I'm going to go with that one.
Okay, they're chilled to perfection.
They're chilled to perfection.
So yeah, they take off, Mike, and we're going to hang out on these boats for a while. So... I'm glad you chose the Katsis. I'm going to be on the Santa Armenta. We're going to be on these boats for 10 years.
Oh no.
Get comfy, buddy.
Oh, no.
And we are basically, like, hampered by uncertain navigational techniques. I get the feeling that they were, like, trial and erroring some technology on this trip, too, because that's the whole point of this crew. And it took us a while, but eventually they did reach a planet. They reached where they're going to stop, ultimately, what is their last planet, apparently.
Oh.
And this is what historians think must be called Tupile.
Hey!
That's where they end up. Don't remember the foundation of the guild?
Right.
Who takes over?
That's right.
The Tupilians!
And the Tupilians were originally Ixians, right?
No. The Mystic Mariners were originally Ixians, and then they let the Tupilians take over.
Oh.
So Fremen Mason and Justin Mason, they were Tupilians that took over that society.
Okay.
Tupilians replace Ixians in the foundation of the guild.
Okay.
But for now, we are Ixian refugees. So there's a small group of Ixian refugees, just as 3 ships worth. That's all that's going to end up on Tupile here.
So they find Tupile, great real estate.
Yeah. Ooh, Mike, budding real estate market. Nobody's out here yet.
Yeah.
It's just there.
And the gorgeous flowers.
Apparently, that only Derek knows about. And Tupile was in a unique state. So the Jihad landed there, steamrolled over it, left most of the infrastructure intact. So it's just the people that have been like reduced down to no technology. But like there's factory systems and such in okay condition, just not being used.
So what was Tupai like before the Ixians got there?
They were pretty productive, pretty advanced. I would say above average in scope of like just the Imperium. But they were nothing like out, you know, crazy, like how I have colored Ix to you in our current Dune timeline as like making these technical wonders.
Right.
That isn't what Tupile was.
Well, I thought that Tupile was like, that's a planet that only the guild knows about. So
nah, well, the guild, there's no guild yet. Right now, we're in like old Empire.
So
we haven't unified all the worlds.
So, but like everyone in the Empire knows where Tupile is at this point.
No.
Oh.
There's no reason they would. There's so many millions.
But Lair and Jihad would?
They got there. It's not like they kept track of every, you know, name of every planet or like a list. I'll give you, like, there must be records to some extent, but they all get lost eventually.
Okay.
If maybe I can use that to, like, scrub over. Sure. That, there is, I see what you're saying. Like, clearly the planet's there, and it would have had, like, it would have had sublight, like, trading and stuff like that. But it just is, it's enough that it can be forgotten. And we're actually going to talk about, like, they think Tupile is close to Ix just because these Ixians got there in 10 years, just kind of bumping around space.
Yeah.
Or however they were getting around. So it must be close enough. But again,
interesting.
In a way.
At
this point, though, the guild is so thoroughly isolated its location, and they're the only ones who could provide travel to it it is effectively erased from history. But to continue, on one of the stops during the wanderings of the Aurelian exiles, Sevna accepted among their number a woman who claimed to be outcast from the Bene Gesserit. One Dardanius Leona Shard.
What's her name?
Dardanius Leona Shard.
Dardanius Ilona Shard?
I would even hazard Reverend Mother Dardanius Leona Shard.
Does it say that specifically? Because she's got three names.
No, it only gives me the three names, Mike. The identity, purpose, and influence of the alleged ex-Reverend Mother are some of the many mysteries surrounding the early history of the Spacing Guild. But it's clear that Leona and Sevna became close friends, establishing a comedy that was later to direct the course of the exile's research.
I want to believe she's an exile or like a rogue mother, but I'm pretty sure that...
What are you thinking?
I'm pretty sure this is a Bene Gesserit plan.
Yeah, it's definitely Bene Gesserit plan. Like, I too want to believe that it's rogue, but like, no, you know she's there
too. You know she's there for a reason.
She is there to intentionally kickstart the guild.
Oh my God, the more I learn about the Bene Gesserit, the more, like... The more I lose faith in the rogue Bene Gesserit theory, because like I know those witches are up to something.
I think it's just gonna get to you so much. Like, when you finally do meet the rogue Bene Gesserit, you're not gonna trust her. You're gonna be like, no, you're up to something. Fool me once. It's just like a self-fulfilling curse.
Now,
When the Aurelian exiles got there, they find that Tupile meets the requirements Venport had in mind from the beginning. We got material resources, a salvageable industrial base, an intelligent labor supply, and a location at the boundary of the known worlds.
Oh.
Because remember, Ix was already a backwater on the edge,
right.
And when they all went to war, they became safer because of that. They were even more of a backwater.
They're at the edge of the known Imperium, more or less.
While the Imperium is tearing itself apart and can't focus on itself. So they're perfectly placed. Now, while Tupile certainly had even less technological expertise than Ix, as a technologically virgin planet, it had something to offer which Venport wanted desperately.
What?
The opportunity for complete control and boundless power.
Ooh.
Yeah. A little storm clouds kind of brewing.
So, where's the balanced power come from? Just for the fact that no one really knows or cares about this planet?
I think he feels pretty. He must feel hidden to some extent because, like, I assume what you're building up to is like why he feels. It sounds like he's going to bypass the Jihad,
Right.
And that he doesn't feel like he has to fear them ever finding out.
Right. Well, the jihad's gone at this point, right?
Mm-mm.
Oh, it's still going on.
It's still hot, baby.
Oh, okay. Okay.
It's still in its prime.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
Yeah, yeah. It kicked off not too long ago. Once they brought down like Transcom.
Okay.
I think the year is about 190, if I recall from.
I can't recall off the top of my head.
If you guys wait a week and check out the Butler and John. No, but I think it is like right around there. Jane Butler passes in like 20 years of then. So nonetheless, it's going on right now, and that's why they're a little isolated. And anyway, that's why the whole Coleman's got moved, remember?
Oh, right,
that's why the Richies are even there, was the kickoff of that.
You're right.
I think he feels isolated enough, and that the boundless power is a reference to maybe like the people on Ix that had stopped him. Mm-hmm. He was advancing, and they said, you can't go past this point. And he's like, no, there shouldn't be. He's sort of like science for science's sake. I get the feeling that Aurelius would never draw a line. Mm-hmm. He would just keep going. The Aurelian exiles presented themselves to the Tupilians as saviors, destined to restore the planet's science, bringing back the wealth and leisure they had known before the jihad. Venport's instrument in the scheme was a quasi-religious organization of Ixians, which he named the Society of Mystic Mariners.
Ah, so that's the origin of the Mystic Mariners.
That is, yeah. Okay. It's a scheme. It's a con job. We're just dressing it up in religion to make them just buy into it and accept it that much easier.
It's not technology, it's mysticism.
Mm-hmm. Let me just show you these ways, and you're just going to indoctrinate them all into this. Bam. And they're going to accept it. And this is reminiscent of me. It's like a very strong parallel to the series Foundation by Isaac Asimov. And in that one, this guy, Harry Seldon, predicts the fall of civilization. And he's able to plant a colony way far out on the edge of the Imperium. He sends a bunch of scientists there. And they are going to basically preserve human knowledge so that we don't go through a Dark Ages. A Dark Age is supposed to last 10,000 years, just according to Harry's stats. And he is able to be like, with this colony here, I can make it 1,000 years. And save all of humanity so much strife and trouble. And one of the steps that his people end up taking is they can create nuclear power. Nuclear power is lost to everyone else in the world because the information is. Mm-hmm. And when reintroducing it to everyone, it is like magic. So would they just make it a religious institution? And then to further insulate themselves, you have to go to their world to learn how to make nuclear power and become, quote unquote, a priest.
You're a scientist, though. Well,
then you're fully indoctrinated into their cause. And then they tell you, like, why they're keeping this kind of close to the chest. Mm. And it's a way for them to control everything.
Can you imagine that?
Of what?
Like, finding a hidden cache of, like, by the way, like, you're in the middle of a dark age.
Imagine
if we found that tomorrow.
No, but I'm thinking, like, and finding out that you're in a dark age?
Yeah.
Would that be, that to me is the more revelatory part. Like, what if we found out, like, no, we're in a dark age right now. And I'm like, I thought we were doing pretty good for ourselves. that'd be really shocking.
This year has been a little shoddy.
But, put them all together. But still, that would be crazy.
Wouldn't that be wild?
And it'd be like to see what it was like
before. A tragedy almost.
Yeah, and it'd be like all the flying cars of the past.
That'd be so wild.
But I just thought that was a crazy parallel. And since this comes out so far after Asimov, I'm hoping they were a fan and kind of alluding back to that, because that's what this sounds like so much. Now, the Tupilians, mindful of their former prosperity and of their present wretchedness, welcome the exiles. So they're like, you're going to make it better? Woo!
Hell yeah.
Confetti goes up, some flyers are there.
Love it.
Venport unquestionably displays the charisma and the shrewdness needed for his adopted role, and the Tupilians are eager for help from any quarter. So he shows up, he puts on his priest robe.
He's got the brains, he's got the charisma, like, yeah.
Yeah, and those are his two big points. Like, in almost a dangerous combination, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, always.
That's supervillain right there.
Mike. we're never going to get a supervillain, but he is sort of he's got a douchebag streak through him. we're going to pull that out soon. Now, Venport combined the resources of planet and people with the trained cadre of scientific knowledge he brought from Ix. In a little more than a decade, Tupilian technology was recreated.
Whoa.
That's 10 years?
10 years. Like, wow. Like I said, I mean, so you have the infrastructure. All you did was you brought in a great manager. Yeah, you yeah, can get yeah, it yeah. done. And I guess a team of like, you brought all management, actually. I'm sorry. Because we had three ships of Ixians that showed up.
We just moved the franchise, more or less. Like, everyone went over.
It just turns out that Rachis was not their planet, guys. Your destiny was elsewhere. So, of course, the Ixians had not erected a technologicalist society from nothing. In the Jihad, Tupile had been scourged, not torn to pieces. Even so, the Exiles achieved a marvel of organization. But more important to Venport himself, he had made giant strides towards his secret goal.
Wait, what's that?
What do you think, Mike? What do you think we've come all the, what have we come all this way to do?
I mean, is he going to make machines again?
Yeah, go a little further. What are we not allowed to do?
Like artificial intelligence kind of deals.
We're gonna push some bounds.
We're gonna
touch that third rail of Dune society right now and be like, guys, we need to talk about computers. So on reaching Tupile, the Exiles began to develop a navigation system that would overcome the greatest handicap caused by the Butlerian Jihad, the loss of computers.
Oh, wait, so he's not going to develop new computers. He's going to find a replacement for computers.
Exactly.
Yep. Oh, that dog. Yeah. Wait, how does he find it, though?
Yeah, let's go. Sevna devoted her time to the design of hyperspace ships. She also became the first known pilot to experiment with the use of melange in ship direction.
The answer is he doesn't. She does.
Exactly.
Oh.
I mean, there's a little teamwork between them, but like Sevna is really the one who cracks his nut.
How did she find it then?
Through her friendship with Dardanius Leona Shard, Sevna learned the ways of the Bene Gesserit, but only those techniques that would realize the navigational potential of spice trance prescience. These studies strained her relationship with Venport, as the anonymous Aurelian memoirs relate. So, we have some memoirs. They're not by Aurelius, but they are concerning him. We don't know who the author is. And ultimately, when we get to this end of the story, you'll understand why he is not the one who wrote them.
Right.
But they are definitely confidants and people that were around this couple in that time period. So I would suspect it's one of the Ixians, perhaps somebody close in their circle.
Right. But Barber.
His Barber, yeah. Hey, somebody's got to have a normal job. Ooh, you know what I didn't even consider? You think Aurelius has like some gnarly facial hair?
Maybe.
I'm thinking like a good Chamberlain mustache or something.
Chamberlain mustache. Yeah. Keeping it in Maine.
You just keep the chin clean, but you go over the nose and on the cheeks. Yeah, exactly.
Do you think he has those wild eyebrows like they have in the movie?
You want Mentat eyebrows?
I want Mentat eyebrows.
We're painting with a broad brush. Let's do it. We got
Mentat. Let's go Bob Ross and this motherfucker.
Give you a happy little Mentat eyebrow. But so these memoirs relate. Venport supposedly said, "You spend altogether too much time with that Jesuit witch. It works to our harm." To which Sevna replied, "No, it works to our help. Not only will I give you your ship, I will show you how to guide it. Pick the furthest star. I will take it there and bring it back."
I love that Aurelius is like a southern kind of like Texan drawl. And then Sevna has got the Russian like bodybuilder kind of voice.
Yeah. I did go a little strong in the revolutionary guys. There, but, I think it's the only Russian I know. I don't know common Russian. We'll go a little more.
You don't know common or uncommon Russian.
That's true. I'm sorry, guys. I don't know Russian. What am I even talking about? I know caricatures. Let's see. So keep it with Sevna. Norma was able to keep all the grandiose of that promise, Mike. Using the industry rebuilt by Venport, she designed the first guild ship, the Golden Advent.
Ooh, what a good name.
Yeah. Legend has it that Sevna christened the ship for Venport's dream of the return of travel, and in his honor, playing on the meaning of his name, because Aurelius is a boy's name, as a boy's name, is of Latin origin, meaning golden.
I didn't realize it meant golden.
Yeah, so that's a little thing she gives to him. Venport, so the legend goes, wanted to call it the Jean Be Damned.
I think I would have preferred the Jean Be Damned.
Yeah, I'm so glad after learning how to pronounce her name, that joke wouldn't have landed on me. Jean Be Damned is fucking great. And he wins, totally. Like, that should have... What a great first hyperspace vessel. You put the biggest fucking computer you can on that thing.
Just a big middle finger painted on the side of it.
I bet the, like, if you cross the jihad, you better hope you're faster. Yeah. Now, Advent is the arrival of a notable person, thing, or event. Commonly used for, like, the second coming of Christ.
Golden arrival kind of thing?
Exactly.
Cool, cool.
So, Mike, you wanna hop on? You want to take it? You want to take this bad boy over
the Advent? Screw these other ships.
Whoa. We'll carefully step off the Santa Advent. But the maiden voyage of the Golden Advent. Now, when the ship was completed in 84 before Guild, ambitious, even revolutionary in its design, Norma Sevna piloted it on its maiden voyage, and in this promise, she failed in part, though through too heavy a reliance on technological traditions.
Wait,
yeah,
not enough spice. I'm like,
in so many words, yes, Mike, not enough spice. I think that's fair. As both designer and accomplished pilot, Sevna was to serve as both captain and navigator, but she was suspicious of the reliability of Melange and unable to free herself entirely from the allure of man-machine interfacing. So that is a technology they had. Up until this time.
Man-machine interface. I imagine from the Alien films, the engineer seat. They're, like, sort of ingrained into the ship.
Okay. What engineer seat? I don't think I remember that from the movie.
Oh, it's, like, the engineer is, like, the alien from the...
Do you mean from, like, those new ones? Or like what they find?
Yeah,
oh,
like, they find you, the dude that's like still stuck in the cockpit, more or less. It's like a fully ingrained, like...
You're dead on. I think I was going to, double back, like, kind of think Matrix, plug it into back of your neck kind of deal. Yep. We're going to actually talk about where her inputs are. They're going to be on either side of her head.
So she actually does sort of like plug in a way.
Directly to the hemispheres of her brain. Oh my God, yeah. What? So we're going analog. So, simply put, she intended to shortcut her way through the many problems still to be solved by replacing the computers with her own space-heightened brain. So we're like, she can't do everything with spice yet. She's not willing to do all the trials, so she still relies on machines to be like, well, this will do this one little job, this will do this little job, right? Terminals were implanted in both hemispheres of Sevna's cerebral cortex. She was thus physically linked to the guidance subsystems slave to the ship's Holtzman drive generators.
Holtzman drive generators!
Oh, yeah! And that's why you need Holtzman to have existed so far back for this all to make sense to me. While the right hemisphere dropped the ship into the void at the spice-directed exact moment, which is a great phrase there.
The what?
The spice-directed exact moment.
Okay.
So you got to be in trance to see the future to get it perfect, right? The left hemisphere navigated the vessel, so using like traditional propulsion methods and kind of hitting it through actual space. So
very much like driving under the influence.
Well, like driving and then also navigating a separate plane of existence, essentially. Yeah. I imagine that's probably equal to drunk driving.
I would hope. Are you good in there? KFC in 20, don't worry.
The Golden Advent reached the test destination on schedule, but Sevna suffered increasingly and silently from the strain imposed by her dual role, as the others on board thought.
Yeah, I mean, can't be doing both those jobs. Yeah. Also, they're plugged directly into her brain.
Yeah, well, I think probably just for synapse control. It's faster. I don't know.
Yeah. Seems dangerous.
Oh, definitely dangerous.
How did they test this? Is this the test?
No. So, like, that technology isn't new, from my understanding. And it feels like that's the reliable thing. the okay. test is like she's half on melange while she's doing this, and she is like personally dipping into like whatever this fast and light kind mm-hmm. of plane is that we go to. We only hear it referred to as the void, and I don't remember it being called the void in like Frank Herbert's text anywhere.
Gotcha.
Of like when he says fold space and stuff like that. So I don't know. But with that, Mike, so while she's suffering kind of silently, if she's not going to talk about it, I can't really talk about it. Why don't we dip into this cranberry mead here? we'll take five, buddy.
I didn't know where we were going with that.
You thought I was just going to stop? Yeah. Like, oh, that's a weird place.
Yeah, but I'm just like, what's happening?
If you insist. All right, Mike, so we poured out some cranberry mead here. You know, we don't got to do any Chome Overlord stuff today. This is nice. It's just you and me. We can just kick it.
Hey.
What do we got? Let me...
This is
new for you too, right?
Yeah, it's cranberry mead by Honeymaker.
That's got a unique smell. It's alluring. Like, it's tart and sweet at the same time.
I can already smell how tart it's going
to
be.
You know what? It's like I'm literally smelling sweet tart.
I'm like half excited and half afraid to drink it.
Yeah!
Is that what you're getting?
That's exactly it. It smells like sour candies.
Oh, yeah, okay.
You get what I'm saying? Like, just a little bit.
I think I'm feeling, like, normal right now. Like, I don't know how I feel about the spice getting into things.
You're like, you want to reach for that machine?
It's not how I normally do my mead.
All right, here we go. I liked the front of that better than the other one. The aftertaste is a little weirder.
Oh.
It's like it's a strange honey. I mean, it's cranberry honey, but
strange.
It's
weirding honey.
Yeah, it's weirding mead. But the front of that is really crisp and it's like,
Yeah.
I like it though. Mead's working for me so far.
Yeah, you liking it?
Yeah, yeah. I'm excited. And there are like five other flavors too, or four.
From this specific company?
Yeah.
Oh, no, they've got more. That's just what we saw.
Yeah, we're going to have to go over to Honeymaker. Yeah. we're going to make a trip.
If I have a favorite.
Yeah, if I can. They must have a spice one. Maybe the cinnamon mead, if I ask them.
Oh, you know what? They might.
That doesn't sound terrible.
All right.
That sounds pretty good. We left off, Mike. Something was happening. Norma was suffering, but she wasn't telling anybody. She's struggling. I don't know how to describe this. Just sort of keeping it to herself.
Is she starting to mutate?
No, it's not that fast. She comes out with flippers, guys. it's not like the fly where we fold space and we just come back. Norma's merged with something else. There was like a bat in the room with her.
Oh God,
Giovanni was born. But we're gonna go into what was actually happening to her. So the electrical mini charges were sympathetically induced in her brain by the implanted electrodes, and her spice prescience caused her to foresee, albeit subconsciously, the trauma these charges would cause. So, as she wants something to happen to the ship, basically her brain sends a little current through, and a current comes back through these charges into her brain. And each one time that's happening, it's doing something into her mind. And it's all tied up with a prescience. But I think what this is telling us is worse is that prescient vision is letting her know that she is hurting herself right now. And it's already been done.
Oh.
It would be like Jessica, like if she got it, or I guess kind of like Paul in the Jihad. Right. You know, knowing like this is, but I've just damned so many people.
Just by knowing this.
Yeah. But for her, it's like her folding that space and moving the ship. She already will see, like, when I come out on the other end, she knows where she's going to end up. Ooh. So let me show you what happens. The psychological effects are a matter of medical conjecture, but experiments on laboratory animals suggest that in such a situation, spice awareness causes functions to be shunted from one hemisphere to the other in an attempt to maintain the functions and to minimize damage. So, this is all from the Rakkus Hordes, which is thousands, you know, post-God Emperor, yada yada, you that many a time. So they've been doing spice test on animals in that time and doing these little bits out. And so what they're saying is that we, you know, Norma hooked up one hemisphere for one job, one hemisphere for the other job. But the effect of the spice is it's like, those two hemispheres are talking, which isn't what would normally happen at that level. So now the hemisphere that should be dropping us in the void is controlling parts of the moving ship. Parts of the moving ship are shifting us in the void.
Oh my God.
Norma's mind is just being ravaged by this, like,
yeah,
plethora of ins and outs and inputs and outputs. Now, Sevna's constant connection made a feedback loop unavoidable, and the condition spiraled upward in intensity. When the return voyage was nearly completed, Sevna went into convulsions like those of grand mal epilepsy. Now, Mike, that is something that I just learned about. And I think I stopped when I told you about this. Right. Grand mal epilepsy. Mm-hmm. And I think it's just weird this comes up twice in like 1 month for me. where it's something, I don't have epilepsy and no one in my immediate family does. Mm-hmm. I knew one kid in like second grade. He had epilepsy because he had like a seizure during recess one day.
Right.
And that was kind of like where I learned this was ever like a thing. And he was like all around through high school and stuff. I don't remember him ever having another one, but like that was a grand mal epilepsy that day in like second grade. Because when you have something like that, it's a type of seizure that involves loss of consciousness and violent muscle contractions.
Oh.
It's usually caused by epilepsy, but it may have other triggers such as very low blood sugar, high fever, or a stroke. The seizure typically has two stages. The loss of consciousness occurs first and lasts about 10 to 20 seconds. And then it's followed by muscle convulsions that usually last, I think it's less than 2 minutes. So it's a small but really intense
thing that
can kind of overwhelm you. And I mean, the innumerable dangers obviously involved in that. Losing consciousness all of a sudden could be like very deadly and fatal in conditions. So really alarming. So it's interesting that that came up. And so that's what's going to happen to Norma while she's piloting the ship.
Oh.
Right. So she goes down, but we're not home yet. We only made it a little ways. Venport had to drop the ship into normal space and complete the return on backup systems. So Aurelius was there. Oh. He has to take control now and drive this, like, classic.
How long did it take?
I don't know. I don't actually got that for you. But backup systems, it could be like maybe we have one of those machines, whatever we use to navigate from Ix over to Tupile, maybe something like that. So I think we're still above like conventional travel, but maybe just we're not folded in space quite yet, though.
Okay.
So I don't know. But it was in a reasonable amount of time that Norma's health, she didn't die on the ship because we couldn't get her back to a hospital. Right. Venport's disappointment tarnished his joy. The obsession of his life had been achieved by someone else, even though a loved one, and had brought her the power and recognition he craved. Sevna was unable to appreciate the honor she had gained. Disabled for months, she showed little signs of improvement.
Wait, she has a disabling seizure, and Aurelius is just like, man, I'm jelly.
Yeah, a little bit. I think, so, okay. This is I'm weaving together the two different articles there, so I know they are juxtaposed pretty harshly. I think in Aurelius, this is from the Aurelius section, so to give him the benefit of the doubt, I just kind of turned his name into doubt. Benefit of the doubt. I think they were just trying to tell you how he was doing internally.
Okay.
Without like coloring that he didn't care for his wife, it's just that this was his dream, and it is
his liaison.
It's like concubine. You got me. She is almost a Bene Gesserit witch, so it all adds up. But I think it's just there to like let us know that, like, yeah, that was his overarching dream and goal, and it has been snuffed out, though unexpectedly and not purposefully. And it's just something that he wanted. So this is going to let us know, because he's going to change his motivations a little bit from here, because he's still going for glory. We're not done.
Okay.
Now, we have a little, one of the Ixians, this guy named Arkid Sidak.
Okay.
And this is a space name. It's A-R-K-I-I-D is what I'm saying. Arkid.
Arkid, yeah. That's a space name.
Or I don't know if it's like, if it should be like Arkid.
No,
I'm trying to give that double I a purpose, but yeah, we'll go with Arkid.
Like Arkid
Sidak. So he's one of the Ixians, and he wrote of Venport's envy. Never has one man traveled so far, only to realize on reaching harbor that the real captain had been Penelope. This is a reference to the Odyssey.
Oh, okay.
To the Iliad and the Odyssey, to coming home to port and being like, you weren't the captain that whole time. Sorry, boss. So I think that's a good little allusion there. Now, we should probably, let's check in on Norma.
Yeah.
We'll head over to the hospital.
There. How's she doing?
Doctors on Tupile eventually diagnosed her condition as induced cortical epilepsy. So bring that down is just going to be like, we are able to induce epilepsy with a series of lights and showing. So they think it was just her visually, maybe that trip when you fold space is just bright, trippy lights, man.
Maybe they
think like, oh, that's all it is. It was just induced. But her seizures continued despite their best treatments. So there's like, they are like, oh, it's just being done on you. Stay away from these kind of triggers and you'll be all set. It still is happening to her. Something's changed in her brain. As a last resort, they separate the two hemispheres by cutting the corpus callosum to halt the continued shifting of functions. So between her two hemispheres.
Wait, so they lobotomize her?
I guess that counts as a lobotomy. With a lobotomy, they go in and they... Yeah, it's messing with any bit of brain matter, I think. Because I know the guy that invented the lobotomy, he literally uses, it's like a metal, it looks like an ice pick.
Yeah.
And it goes up your eye, or your tear duct.
I've seen it.
All the way to the brain. And then he invented a little bit where you pull back this little wire on the handle, and the tip of it, so it's straight going in your tear duct, the very tip will then turn to be like a T, and then that allows, and then you spin it. Well, that's how you like, you mess with that matter.
It
was more efficient. And he's a terrible doctor. He's part, he's responsible for JFK's sister. He lobotomized her. Lobotomy is really wild. Do you know you're fine afterwards?
No.
Like, you can have a conversation with the people afterwards. And like, there was one, I'm going on a little tangent here, Mike.
Okay.
You got to go this bit. So he does a lobotomy. This guy had his wife lobotomized on the ride back. She is basically just describing, she's able to talk to him. She's normal. And just saying how like, she has basically no agency anymore. But like, the husband is describing it as a positive thing. And for me, I'm just like, oh my God, you poor woman. She's just like, I just feel so fine. I didn't have any fuss anymore. Maybe it was the husband describing her. But like, it just sounded so terrible. But like, so this person just had no motivation in them anymore.
Okay.
They were just fine, just breathing. And that was it.
All right. It's
so bizarre. You take away a part of them. But so with her, it's that piece connecting the two hemispheres that we cut.
It's called
the corpus callosum. Now, while not essential for survival, a missing or damaged corpus callosum can cause a range of developmental problems. It's thought that 1 in 3,000 people have a genesis of the corpus callosum, a congenital disorder that sees a complete or partial absence of the conduit from birth. Like 1 in 3,000 people just... have either that thing is small, doesn't do its job, or it's not there at all.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah, I just thought that was crazy. That's real. That's real science for you. I just want to throw that in on the corpus callosum. But otherwise, it's the bit that's connecting those two hemispheres they wouldn't stop communicating for Norma.
Okay. Yeah.
Like, so ever she needed since this
in order to survive.
Mm-hmm.
Because she definitely did more.
Did more what?
More flights.
Well, Mike, the seizures do stop, but Norma's abilities were permanently crippled. She fell into depression and she retired from active life.
Well, I just ate my own words right there.
Yeah, sorry to give it so quickly.
Damn it.
She will eventually pass away in 78 before Guild.
Oh shit.
But I can tell you, she will outlive her husband or liaison. Norma's, and after her husband will disappear, as previously alluded to, she will spend a year without him and basically declines in health until her death in that year. So it's probably the saddest year of her life, where she is left by herself, crippled, alone. She can't pilot ships anymore. She's not working on hyperspace travel.
Damn.
Yeah, but she changes everything. So, like, her contributions to the Space and Guild cannot be overestimated. Although little remains of her original designs, she showed that Melange could stimulate the human mind to replace forbidden computers. To gain this knowledge, she paid the greatest price.
So she was the proof of concept, more or less.
Yeah. Yeah, everything. I mean, she invented the whole field. Her and that infamous Leona Shart. That Bene Gesserit. She gave her the spice.
Right, right, right.
She got her hooked on drugs. And then taught her all this Bene Gesserit tricks, but only about spice. Like, Norma is the weirdest Bene Gesserit of them all, because she basically only got Reverend Mother training. No other subsequent...
But she's not a Bene Gesserit.
No. Not at all. But I think that spice part is weird. That definitely puts you up there more than anybody else, right? Mm-hmm. I think, that's the supreme Bene Gesserit secret up until this point.
Oh, man.
And, Mike, this should make our mystery even bigger. Where the fuck does spice come from?
Well, we know it comes from Arrakis, right?
We okay, that's not what I mean. Who is getting it? Who got it first? And how? How do the Bene Gesserit have it? I get how Aurelius is going to get it.
Right, right, right. I think I asked you this once, too.
Mm-hmm.
And you didn't have an answer for me then.
Nope, and I was hoping I would today, but nope. Because still today, it's still like, a rogue Bene Gesserit pulled some strings and got some spice some places.
I don't even know, man.
Yeah, we keep trying to bring it back, but every time we do, it just ends up further back in history. And it's just like, I don't think we're ever going to solve this one. Which maybe is for the best, Mike. We need a mystery to keep digging into.
Well, okay. What is the Bene Gesserit? They have a plan at this point, I'm assuming.
I think they have a little bit of prescience. You know, they got a little future sight in them.
Okay.
I think they're playing the cards to get the Imperium established.
Well, I definitely think that's the plan right now, but I think they even have an overarching plan above that. I think Kwisa Haderach is always something that they want to strive for ever since the foundation.
Right, 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 right. But Kwisa Haderach is dependent on there being an Imperium. Because the whole point of the Kwisa Haderach is that they will control the Imperium.
Right, right. But through him. Here's the thing. I think they were even doing that beforehand. Just took maybe several thousand years longer during each cycle of, breathing lines.
Okay, yeah.
So this is a way to speed it up, like you were saying earlier with the Asimov thing. It's like, who needs 10,000 years of Dark Ages? We can make it 1,000.
Yeah.
That's the Bene Gesserit that, here for. Okay, we're going to make it 1,000 instead.
I like that. Their whole plan, just shortening it all up, being like, we can get this all back together.
Exactly. So an idea is that they're sort of already spreading from planet to planet,
mm-hmm.
Getting bloodlines established so that, hey, next time we visit there in 10,000 years, we can go ahead and take some of the children, you know, get them into the Bene Gesserit order, and then now we've got those memories ingrained in us now.
I'm a little on board. I'm off with your scale of the 10,000, but
I was nitpicking. Just taking what you said. Yeah.
I'm totally, but I think you're on for their pages. You got the, of where they're going with things.
Right.
Yeah. I think you got it.
That would also explain when we were talking about Gaz Helm-Mahayim, mm-hmm. Where did she learn this Fremen word and those Fremen memories? Just that line being on Arrakis, even.
Oh, okay.
Even if it wasn't intended.
Are we abandoning her previously going to Arrakis, though?
Dude, I don't fucking know anymore. You didn't so many. I'm shaking my head I don't know, man. sure, maybe, but I think this is kind of cooler in the grand scheme of things.
Definitely.
And it's very Bene Gesserit instead of just happenstance, my best friend happened to be the most important person.
True. Yeah. Making everyone know everybody. I like this idea of the Bene Gesserit just sort of coming back to harvest a memory line. Does seem like a really cool idea to be like, we do these planets just so we can show up years later and then, boop, take all those, assimilate those memories. It probably takes three Reverend Mother lifetimes to get all the information out of the memories.
Oh, yeah, probably.
That's awesome. So why don't we, let's carry on though. So life goes on, even if that's what happens to Norma, but we were jumping ahead a year. Norma spends a year by herself. Let's turn the clock back a little bit, Mike.
Okay.
Let's go back to about 80 before Guild. So we give Norma two more years of life. Aurelius has won.
Because
he disappears.
Oh, only one year of life. Yes. He won the game. Oh. He's done. He did it.
Venport, with his overarching goal, his dream has been stolen from him in so many words. He plunges into ship construction and spice trance education with fanatical energy, working both with the exiles and their Tupilian assistants around the clock. By 80 before Guild, 12 ships have been assembled, each with trained spice-assisted Ixians at the bridge. Through the next few months, test sites of limited range accustomed both captains and navigators to tasks that had debilitated Norma. So we've taken that dual role, split it into two people. That is critical, we've realized. Right. we're just working them around the clock until they are just perfectly in tandem with
not
one
even
another.
That hard on payroll.
Nope.
One extra job. It's fine.
Hey, we can just work this out. So he gets ready, Mike.
All right.
Once more into the void we go.
Mm-hmm.
In 79 before Guild, Venport began an extended test of coordinated ship movement through the void, the first such mission attempted. The anonymous author of the Aurelian memoirs describes the result. I want to call it Aurelian again. you know what? It's Irulan. That's what I think I'm saying. That is what it is.
That's where it's coming from.
At least I found the root cause. It's like pulling a splinter out.
Projecting Irulan onto memoirs.
What did she do? She like voiced me in some manner. It's just like subliminal in my mind. So this is from the Aurelian memoirs. While we and the other ships relied on a division of labor between captains and navigators, Aurelius in the flagship Norma Sevna insisted on doing both by himself, as she had, but better and safer, succeeding where she had failed. Since we were caught up in his fervor, there was no descent. We dropped into the void and lost radio contact. But when we reached our destination, only 11 ships emerged.
What? So wait, 12 went in, 11 came out?
Mm-hmm. And do you know what one we're missing?
Oh, it's the one that...
The Norma Sevna, captained by Aurelius Venport himself.
So he named it after her.
Mm-hmm.
Dang.
Yeah, I like... The honor he gives her and then the pride of him having to do it himself.
Right, right, right.
Yeah. I don't know what to make of it.
He was doing the same thing where, like, she did it. I'm going to do it, too.
Yep. We can trust that he did, you know, we've done a little more research.
We don't need to plug directly in. We've got Bluetooth now.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like, hey, more spice. but just, I think he's done enough and he's thinking, like, okay. But this is him trying to take that dream back.
Mm-hmm.
He wants to be the one, right?
You think that this is his final blaze of glory without him realizing it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think he, because
he's got something to prove.
If he would have done it, he would have been Norma needed the machine. I did it all, you know, just me, just Aurelius, the golden child.
Gonzo.
But this memoir continues. We spiraled outward from Kovanek for 3 standard days searching for the Norma Sevna, but we found nothing, neither at Kovanek nor at Tupile when we returned. A few superstitious Tupile technicians muttered about Ampeliros. I can't picture Venport as the wanderer of space, but he might as well be. We Ixians are finished here. Now comes the day of the Tupilians.
That's awesome. So, I like that.
He folded space. Anything could happen when you fold space, Mike. Anything.
So we have possible Ampeliros subjects being the Mad Holtzman.
The Mad Holtzman on now, its rotating orbit, maybe and now being observed. The
Norma Sevna, and it's weird, just like who knows where it is and where it's going.
What happened to it? Yeah. It just vanished. So it's just another ship out in the stars.
I like it.
That's my favorite little bit in the story. And it just seems so perfect. Because then, like, the goat, like, imagine it's, like, almost spectral form showing up from, like, whatever plane it's trapped in. If something on the Alamo Mythal, and it just, see it. Like, that's what I wanted to really
be. That's really cool. I would like that.
So we get to our final paragraph here in the Venport article. We already finished Norma's off. Although Venport was gone, the Ixians had indeed completed their work. Like the dynamos of old Rachis, Venport had powered his Ixian colleagues and Tupilian worshippers alike toward the vision that lured him, the rebirth of fast, safe, interstellar travel.
I like it. I like it. That was really good.
That, Mike, is the Aurelius Venport Norma Sevna story.
I like it.
As a final little trivia bit, do you know what a dynamo is?
What, a dynamo?
A dynamo.
I don't know. It's a word I'm familiar with.
Yeah, you know how to use it, right? You know what it means when I say, like, you guys are dynamos, like the dynamos of old Ortiz. This all makes sense. A dynamo is a machine converting mechanical energy into electrical energy. Oh. A generator.
Oh, and dude, it's a fucking microphone.
It uses it so dead on here, though, but it's like the dynamos of old Ratchis. Venport had powered his Ixian colleagues.
Like, that's really good.
Really good news. That is what triggered me to be like, I'm going to just figure, I won't define it, I guess. I defined so many other words, and I was kind of happy with that. I was just like, a little bit of a little more info.
I like it. I like it.
So, like I said, Mike, it brings us to the end here. For everyone else, we've kind of done this ass backwards, you and me, but to finally connect all these little bits of the story, we did our previous deep dive, like I said, in episode 29. So that's the beginning, or the establishment of the Highliners. So that's going to take our story onward from here. And when the Tupilians really take over, which is how that memoir ended.
Right.
Right. And then we did our, what was the other one that we did? Between Two Guilds on Guild Highliners. If you guys haven't checked that one out already, go check that out. And that's like the little more particular bits on what the Highliners actually end up looking like. Because Norma's design is gone. They make something new down the road. So if you haven't listened to that, head over there, guys.
That's pretty good.
All that information's waiting for you. And with that, Mike, that's all I got.
That's all you got.
I hit the end of my notes. I'm done. I've done my duty.
I love it. Oh.
Consider ourselves out of Between Two Dunes.
Oh. Yeah. Climb yeah. Up. For everyone that doesn't know, we just literally recorded these like back to back, week to week.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm personally excited to get back to the main story.
Yeah. Oh my God. I'm so excited.
Oh my gosh.
I'm glad we took some time all these holidays are going on, but like, oh, and that book starts up, Mike. It's going to be so much fun.
Oh my gosh. I don't even know where we're going.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, hey, you'll have to listen back in. I gave you a little teaser.
It was Fade Rotha, right?
it was something hard.
Whatever. I think like, oh, we're going to go with Paul. No, it's fucking Fade Rotha, probably. Fucking
Fade Rotha. Ooh, well. Since this is Between Two Dunes, Mike, I know, I don't just walk out of here. It doesn't just end.
Would you like to do the honors, Derek?
No, I'd never. I would never take that from you, buddy.
Don't take away the glossary game.
Back in all of its glory with what few words remain in the glossary. Don't have
a lot. No. I'm having a hard time.
Scraping the bottom of the barrel. That's why we're not counting points. What word did you pick out for me today?
All right, we got a good one. I don't know. We definitely haven't seen it yet.
Oh, okay. That's interesting.
Yeah, I know. I was actually really impressed. But let's see if you remember what it is. Liban.
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 Liban?
Yeah.
Huh. Can you... I'm going to need a clue. Obviously, I'm like, Lisan? But Liban. Liban? Liban. Give me a clue. What can you muster up? Without giving too much
it
away.
It isn't edible.
Okay. Awesome. It's not edible.
No, it is
an
edible.
Oh, it is.
It's not inedible.
Okay.
You can eat it.
Thank you. Okay. That's very clear.
It's good for consumption.
Okay. So Liban, it's something you can eat.
Yeah.
I can put it in my mouth and no one would look at me weird. I immediately want to lean towards that food that they were eating, that like spice and bird meat with honey.
Oh.
Honey for the mead. Oh, you would.
You don't know what I did.
Are you that clever, Mike?
You don't know what I did.
Now I'm stuck. I can't go any further. But the honey seems like maybe that's what caught your eye and why you picked it. But like stretching my brain, I don't really have anything else to grab onto that. I can't think of like maybe like an Eastern like an Eastern food. That would be called like Liban, maybe that I've had.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, granted, I don't have like, there's no Middle Eastern food around here.
Yeah, no, we don't have a lot of, we got some shawarma, but that's about it.
I have so many great Thai options, but so I'm gonna go with that bit of morsel of food that really tripped Paul up. Is like bird meat and spice coagulated with honey and then wrapped in a leaf, and it's basically lambus bread.
Coagulated with honey?
Does that not make sense to you?
I guess I need to look up the definition of coagulation again. I don't think that's...
Yeah, it's like a thickening.
Okay.
Like a blood coagulant. That's how you stop bleeding.
Okay, okay.
The blood, it bounds up, and basically the cells jam up and become all right.
I guess I've never used it in that context before.
And Mike, that's why we come to this table.
We're not mispronouncing words. We're making them up sometimes, too.
And sometimes we're picking hills to die on that we're going to regret when someone sends an email. But
See, when someone sends an email, that's when we know, like, yeah, I'm wrong. Yeah. But until then, I'm right.
So what do you got? Give me bird meat.
Lieben. Fremen Lieben is a spice water infused with yucca flower. Originally,
fucking flowers. Is that the one from Tubile? Is that where that's from?
Well, no, it's spelled F-L-O-U-R.
Okay.
So it's flower.
Gotcha. Yeah. No, did you say yucca flower?
Yeah.
Oh, that a yucca is a root. Yeah.
Oh, there you go. Oh,
that is a real thing. I know exactly what that is, there you actually. Go.
And after that, originally a sour milk drink, which is kind of a weird leap from spice water with flour to sour milk.
Yep.
I don't know, like, how you got that.
Hey, how do you make almond milk and stuff? None of it's coming from a cow.
But Derek, I decided to do a little extra research.
Uh-huh.
And by little extra, I mean, I checked the good old-fashioned Wikipedia.
Hell yeah.
It's a real thing. Not spelled the same way.
Oh.
Sort of took two different interpretations of the spelling and combined them, I think.
Okay.
But it is a milk product. Specifically, that's the definition that makes it Lieben. So the term Lieben, variously Laban or Iben in Arabic, it's a Middle Eastern and North African drink and refers to a food or beverage of fermented milk. Generally, there are two main products known as Lieben. In the Levant region and parts of Arabia, yogurt. And in Arabia and North Africa, buttermilk.
Okay, wow. Right when you said fermented milk, I was like, that sounds so revolting and disgusting.
And then and you're then like, we have that all the time.
Yogurt.
Yeah,
yogurt.
Just fucking yogurt.
Yep.
It can be served at breakfast, lunch, dinner. For the buttermilk drink, it's kind of traditionally prepared by letting the milk ferment for about 24 hours. You churn it, and then you remove the butter. And then there you go. That's your Lieben. Add some spices to it or whatever.
Oh, shit. Have you ever had whey?
No. That's a... Yeah, okay, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, I've made a paneer. It's a kind of cheese. It's a really simple cheese to make where you boil milk. As soon as it's in a rolling boil, you just add a little lemon juice, and it separates the curds.
It curdles.
Like, in seconds. They'll separate it out. And then you take the curds out, you press that. That's your paneer, essentially. You're done. That's it. And you just let it sit, and that's paneer. It's just curds. And then what's left is the whey. And it's basically like some kind of cloudy, very watery liquid.
Oh.
But it has like all the nutrients from the milk are still in there. So like one of the best drinks you can make for yourself is just like whey and orange juice. Amazing. But it's like if you just happen to be creating cheese and you don't know what to do, save that whey, drink that shit. It's great for you.
Interesting.
Huh. So I can see this milk thing entirely, and I'm actually entirely on board.
I think we're going to have a little bit of a science project over the holidays.
I don't know why I have such an aversion to the word, like, fermented milk.
Just looked disgusted when I said that.
Even knowing what it is, I'm like, that isn't right. That's something against God. I will get my jihad
sour
going.
Sour milk is just like, that means that something is way past its Best Buy day.
Something's wrong. Yeah.
But no, I just thought that was kind of cool.
That's fantastic. Oh, I'm glad to learn that. I was close then. I'm so glad I found food.
You were close. I said it's something that you can consume, and you're just like, it's chicken. I don't know.
Fair enough.
Yeah, I don't know if you're that close.
Nope, no. I was close to your clue. Yeah, yeah. Once you said you told me, I was like, oh, shit. Yeah, I didn't
solve it. Like you didn't get shit.
I really didn't. But Mike, this mead's great.
This mead is fucking awesome.
Okay. I think ultimately... That takes us to the end for the month, then.
Yeah,
right?
And you know what? We're not going to give you the whole spiel. You know where to find us. Mm-hmm. You're a Spice Worlder.
Hell yeah. You guys, Spice World Pod, everything.
Yeah, literally everything. We got lucky. We don't have to copy paste.
Yeah, and we've got a few direct messages on Patreon. I would always encourage you guys, if you have any questions, send them right to us. That is probably the most direct way, and you'll get definitely the fastest response to anything else. So.
And we have been a little lacking on the immediate responses of late, but we've been trying to get better about that.
Mm-hmm. And if you guys, anything you want to bring up for book three, just say Derek Size Only. And I really want to get your inputs.
I really hate when I open up an email that says Derek Size Only. I'm like, Derek, it's for you.
Any thoughts you guys want to share as we get to the close of this book or questions from Mike? Throw them out there.
Yeah,
we can get a spot
for you. No, I want a Mike Size Only.
If you can wing it. What are we going to say? If you want to talk about fermented milk, send a message to Mike. I think with that, though, Mike.
Without you guys, the spice can't flow.
Like our casting couch for I don't think Megan's gonna work. Nah, it didn't have the right energy. We just weren't matching. Think of
wasn't any chemistry.